The following is an unrehearsed taped interview with Eva Dean Edwards, farmer in Estill County. The interview was conducted by Jenny Scott for the Kentucky Oral History Commission. The interview was conducted at Mrs. Edwards' farm in Estill County on June 29, 1983 at 8:30 a.m.
Okay, Mrs. Edwards, I'd like to thank you for meeting with me this morning. And I'd like to start out by personal background with you, your name, age, your parents' names, whatever you can tell me. Just go from there.
Well, my name is Eva Dean Edwards. I married Erman Edwards here in Estill County. And my maiden name was Bowen, Eva Dean Bowen.
How do you spell that?
B-O-I-A-N. And my parents, my father's name was Thomas Gentry Bowen, and that's because his mother was a Gentry, and I think all old people then named their children after the wife's maiden name, a lot of instances.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother was a Park. She was from Madison County, and she was the daughter of John Waller Park and Fanny Bowen Park. My mother and daddy were second cousins. Everything that I ever did wrong, I said, well, that's because my parents are second cousins.
A leaning post there for you. Scapegoat.
And the year after my mother and daddy married, my mother's parents moved to Mississippi.
Where in Mississippi?
Brooksville. And not too far from Macon. You know, and so when I was a little girl, always once a year we went to Brooksville to see my grandparents, and then we'd stay, you know, like 3 or 4 weeks because it was such a long trip, and it was on a train. And
oh, what on the train?
And you know, back in the days, I don't know if the train windows were open or not, but we had soot on us when we got there, and it was sort of, you know, but. Then they came here, and Mama had, one sister and 6 brothers, and we had a lot of company when I was growing up, my daddy's family, too.
Now, did you live in this house?
Yes, we lived in this house. I was born in this house, up over the living room, upstairs. And my daddy's family had lived in this house, too. And they were William Bowen and Katie Gentry Bowen. And there was a log house up on the hill here, to the right of where we are, up on that hill. And my daddy was born there because his parents lived here too. When he was born, his mother and daddy lived in that house.
Who lived in this house?
My grandpa Billy, we called him. His parents were William Senior and Mariah Parks.
Mariah
Bowen. And when I was born, my grandfather wanted to name me Mariah. See, my mother and daddy were living in the same house with my grandparents. They moved here to take care of my grandparents.
And you were born here.
And I was born here. And when I was born, and I was a little girl, my grandfather wanted me named Mariah after his mother. But Daddy wrote all these names down, and he'd write them and look at them, and he finally decided on Eva Dean, because, and then Bowen. Eva had 3 letters, and Dean had 4, and Bowen had 5, and he thought it looked nice. So that's what they did that.
Based your name on.
Yeah. Now you want to know about my great grandparents' family and then how he came here and that sort of thing?
Yes,
please. His father was named James Bowen, and they lived in Virginia. And his mother's name was Zuriah Eubank Bowen.
Zuriah.
Z-U-R-I-A. Now, let's see, Z-E-U-O-R-I-A-H.
That
I'm not sure that's right. I can't read what they've written here. Let me see if I've typed it out someplace.
I've never heard that name before, I don't think.
Z-E-O, no, Z-E-R-O-I-A-H. Z-E-R-O-I-A-H, Eubank. And her family were from Monroe County, Kentucky. And she had married James, and they lived in Virginia. And they had eight children. Now, their children's names were Martha, William, Sophie, John, Emily, Dassey, and Nancy. My great-grandfather was William. So when William and Mariah Park married and lived here, and they had children, they named them Melinda and Martha and Sophie and John and Emily and Nancy. Only they had more children. They had 12. Two babies died, though. The only name they didn't use of that family was Dassey.
Dassey, that's also a name I haven't heard.
I hadn't either until then. And James, my great-grandfather James, died. And Zariah went back to her Eubank relatives in Monroe County. And then she went to Missouri. And all these brothers and sisters went to Missouri. But my grandfather came here. And he came here because in Monroe County he had worked. He was about 15 and 16 years old as a tan yard apprentice.
Oh.
And so there was an old man here who ran a tan yard. And Grandpa came to work with this old man. Now, the old records show that they had two other, the census records, you know, mm-hmm. for family. It was just this old man and my grandfather, my great-grandfather, and two boys, I guess, who worked for him or maybe were doing apprentice work, but they lived here. And there was a little log house right out here in our backyard, and that's where they lived. And we used it when I was a little girl. It was still there, and it was a smokehouse. We hung our meat in it and sulfured apples in it. And that's about all that. I mean, you know, that's sort of the background now of what I can tell you. Now, as for farming, when my great-grandfather lived here, they cooked on fire. Well, that's not farming, but anyway, life was this way. They cooked on a fireplace.
Mm-hmm.
He worked in the tan yard.
On this farm?
Right here, yes, and the tan yard was right down this little ravine here.
Buy the farm then from the old man that owned it?
Uh-huh.
He bought
I think it was just, you didn't buy it, it was just land. And you paid taxes on it so many years, and it was yours, or something like that.
Oh, okay. So that's how
it was. Not a government grant. It was not a land grant.
But he just paid the taxes. And
you know, you just, it was like homesteading. You stayed there so many years, and it was yours.
Okay. So that's how you acquired it.
Uh-huh. Mm. And of course, I can't remember my great-grandfather. He died before I was born, but my grandfather used to tell me that when he was a little boy and my great-grandfather was here, that if they wanted meat, they just went out and shot a wild hog, or they killed wild turkeys. You know, it was no problem. The woods was full of animals that they ate. And as for farming, well, see, Grandpa ran the tan yard. So I guess he didn't farm much, just raised a garden. And they plowed with oxen, like two cows with a yoke to hold their heads together. And they plowed that way. And when they had a sled with runners, you know, and a flat on that, and they hauled things on a sled.
Well, they would have cleared this land then, wouldn't they? Your great-grandfather.
Oh, it was Woods when my great-grandfather came here. And when he and Mariah settled here, they married in 1832. And when they had children and the first little baby died, they buried it on the hill behind the house. If you'll stand up, you can look out that window and see the cemetery.
There's
90 graves over there now and 27 unmarked, just with stones.
Now, that's all your family, or?
Well, some of the neighborhood
neighbors
have been buried here, too. And we don't sell lots. It's just free to somebody who wants to be buried here. And a lot of our family's buried there. And so that started that cemetery. And then they're buried there, William and Mariah, and then William and Katie. My grandparents and my daddy and mother are buried there.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
That's great. Now, we have a family cemetery at home. It's about as far from the house as it is from our farm. But the last person buried there was 1863. And they stopped using it.
Well, my mother was buried there in February, the last grave here, I guess. She was 96 years old, and she died the 19th of February.
Are you going to be buried there also?
Mm-hmm.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Okay. Well, and so there wasn't much farming, you know. And when great-grandpa's children married, he gave them land. Now, before my daddy was born, my grandparents lived out by the Madison County line at Drowning Creek. Daddy was 11 when they moved back out here. But I can't tell you how many acres, but there's homestead agreements with every one of his children and a lot of other people, too.
That he gave land.
Yes. That he gave them land he would move people onto this land and they were to fence it and clean it up. And it was for a year. If things went well and they were living all right and progress was being made and so forth, they could do it for another year. It was like sort of like a lease.
So yet
it wasn't theirs ever. It was like...
And it was a matter of getting it cleaned up.
But for his children, it was a matter of if they stayed there so many years, they could have the farm. That was his children. So my grandpa William got the farm out by Drowning Creek by the Panola line. Out the road here, 2 miles, I guess, on the way to that one, was his son James's.
It must have been a tremendously large farm.
Well, see, I can't tell you in acres how big it was because he just
divided it.
Paid tax on some land that wasn't anybody's. And he, you know, it was just the law back then that you could sort of just see what you want and pay tax on it. I guess it's when tax first started. So, Grandpa James, that's my mother's grandfather now. See, I told you they were second cousins. They lived out there. And then this place across the road up here was his daughter Sally. And let's see, there was one almost to Panola, but it was still on the left side of the creek, and it was nearer that farm that was my Grandpa William's, that was John's. But John sold his and went to Garrett County. And then that was all the boys, I guess. And then the daughters, well, this was a daughter, Sally, Sarah, that lived across the road, and then Mary Ann married Guilford Wagers, and he gave them a farm. It was still back this direction. And they had 6 children, and both of them died 5 days apart with measles.
Oh, my goodness. And when was this?
Well, it's... Let me see.
About what time?
I can tell you just exactly in a minute. Let me find a list of that children.
I know we had a measles epidemic.
Yes, we did. And they died with, I have that. I'll just tell you in a minute. It was in, Marianne died the 19th of May, 1877. And they had six little children, and my great-grandparents brought those six children here and raised them.
With their children?
Well, their children, by 1877, they were mostly married and gone.
So they took another family?
They took another family and raised them. Now, those children, one of them married, there was two girls. Eliza married Will Thomas and lived here in this community. Laura Wagers married a Todd, and she lived at Kingston in Madison County. And the boys went on to Missouri. There were four boys, and they went to Missouri. Most of our people who went west went to Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
Although there was only one boy in my grandfather's family who went west, and first he went to Missouri, but he must have gone on further because there's Bowens in California and Washington. My cousin went to a Bowen, it was a B-O-W-E-N,
mm-hmm.
reunion, and he said they looked just like us.
Huh.
You know.
Well, the spelling of the name, the B-O-I-N, that's unusual too.
Well, it's like a, sort of like a French spelling, and yet they say that before Virginia, you know, they came from England.
Hmm.
So, I don't know.
I never encountered that. I've heard the B-O-W-E.
Now there was, and there's somebody I don't even know, some Bowen, and he spelled it B-O-I-A-N, who works for a newspaper in New York or something. He says there's some of this same name in Alberta, Canada, and that in Romania, there is in the Bucharest phone book, I think that was the place he said, 12 names right now with that name. So I don't know if they went that direction, you know, or
just
I have no idea how this all came about that there's
added
like that. And then when I was a little girl and my grandfather lived here, we had oxen and horses both.
I can't
really tell you that I've ever seen a yoke of oxen hooked up, you know, working. I know we had some old yokes here in good shape when I was a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
But Grandpa had used mostly horses and mules.
Well, was the land cleared by that time?
A lot of it, but not like it is now. They burned wood to cook with,
mm-hmm.
and to heat in the fireplaces with in the wintertime, and they used the wood to have it sawed and build the outhouses around, and you know that sort of pushed the woods back mm-hmm. all the time.
Did a lot of clearing.
Yes, yeah. And then they cleared land just. To have it for farmland.
Mm-hmm.
But there were still not big fields when Grandpa was farming.
And what did your grandfather raise on his farm?
Well, corn. And you thought of it like this. You raised a garden to feed the family. Mm-hmm. You raised corn to feed the animals.
So it's a sustenance.
Yeah. And he raked. And the hay was like they cut the hay with a scythe or a cradle. A cradle is like a big scythe, only it has teeth that stand up, you know, like this high, and you make a big swipe with it, and that gathers it in.
Picks it up
as you cut hay. Well, now that was by hand, you see. And then that was for their, they'd make a haystack, and that was for their animals.
So he didn't sell anything.
They didn't worry about selling things, or they didn't worry a lot about buying things. They had it right here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had their own eggs and and meat and vegetables, and they sulfured apples and they canned. And even I can remember when I was a little girl, we didn't buy a lot. We didn't mean to. And we had a lot more to eat then than we do now.
Mm-hmm. And a lot better.
That's right. It was.
A lot better. Uh-huh. And an orchard. I'm sure you had an orchard.
Well, we always had apple trees. There were two apples on this side of the front yard and one on this side of the walk. And they were sweet apple trees.
Mm-hmm.
Sweet apples. And then there was an apple tree in the backyard, and there were cherry trees in at this back corner of the house. About three cherry trees right up there. A couple of peach trees out here. And then in that spring lot, there was two apple trees, I remember. And over this way in that field, there was an apple tree. Now, that was just scattered trees around when my grandfather was here. But when my daddy took this farm over, he planted an orchard up by that old log barn. And let's see, he had 3, 6, 9, 12, about 16 trees. One crabapple tree, and then there were different kinds of apples. You know, like we had one yellow apples, and then there were Golden Delicious and Grimes Golden, and I can't tell you the name, Stark's Delicious or mm-hmm. something. And then there were peaches.
So everything you needed.
And we gathered peaches when they'd get ripe, bushels of them, you know, and Mama canned them, and we could put the apples in the cellar, and they'd keep till Christmas time. Mm-hmm. At nighttime, we'd go down there and get a pan of apples and sit around the fire and eat them,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we just had plenty of apples.
And
then
she
made apple sauce.
Did you have any pears?
We had one old pear tree down here in the backyard, and they were as hard as a rock. And they were a certain kind of pear. I can't tell you the name.
Not the Bartlett.
Well, they weren't. Never did they get nice and ripe like a good pear that you go back.
Grainy.
Always grainy and hard. And they got to be such a mess after we used the lawnmower and cut the grass, you know. And we had to clean up under the pear tree before we could cut the grass.
Mm-hmm.
So we just cut it down.
Wasn't really worth it.
Mama used to make mm-hmm. preserves out of it, and people around the neighborhood made preserves and would come here and get a bucket of pears mm-hmm. for that.
There aren't many pear trees left now.
Right? No, we don't have any.
No. We don't have any anymore.
Mm-mm.
They're hard to find.
Mm-hmm.
So he really didn't grow anything to sell, like you said. He didn't worry about
that. I don't
think
so. I don't think that. Grandpa worried about selling anything.
He didn't have tobacco.
So far as I know, we didn't. I don't know. I've heard him talk about selling a load of corn, maybe, or so many barrels of corn. I'll tell you something they sold. They made apple cider.
And sold cider.
And sold that. And I can remember where this house where Daddy was born up here, we used it for a hen house, and then it just got to be a place where they put lumber that they didn't need right then.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember when there were 3 barrels of vinegar in there. People would come here to get vinegar.
So he made...
Yeah. Now when
cider
my...
Cider
and vinegar, I remember. And I guess... And honey... He had beehives, and he sold honey, and he would sell signs of meat and hams, and, you know, but not crops.
But in a way...
In a way, he sold things, but they
just
were
just...
what
he needed the
right.
cash.
Yeah. And now my great-grandfather, who had the tan yard, had a commissary up here at this house is now. There was a log square room, which was the commissary. And he sold, like, they made leather items and sold, like boots and bridles and saddles. One time the Union Army came through here and robbed the commissary. They just stood there, and Grandpa just stood there and watched them take things out of anything they wanted, and whiskey. I don't know who made the whiskey. You know, I don't know... I never heard that great-grandpa made the whiskey, but He bought whiskey and sold it there in that store.
Well, your family, your grandfather, great-grandfather, Southern sympathizers, Union sympathizers, which one?
Well, let's see. I don't think that the boys were ever the right age to fight in either army. You know, they were little boys maybe at the time. And my grandfather, my great-grandfather himself, and I don't know what war that was. I can't really pin these things. I hadn't really thought it out. But he left home to go in the army somewhere, and they all just took it like a funeral, you know. And he was gone, and they thought he was away fighting and all this. But war was declared about 3 days after he got someplace, you know, and so he came back home. And they were all so glad. That was my great-grandfather.
Great-grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
So that would have been, would that have been Civil War?
Well, it was 1832 that he married, and he was married and had some children. When was the Civil War? 1860.
Or 61.
Yeah, 61.
So
well, I don't know. No, that makes him a little too old, it seems. I can't tell you that. I just don't know that. I don't know.
So,
but I've heard him tell that story, you know, that he went away to the
war. And they knew he'd never come back.
Oh, yeah. That's the way it always was then, you know. And my mother has told me that in World War I, some of her brothers and cousins and so forth went. And that was in Richmond, you see, when the depot was out here at the crossing there where the railroad still is. And she said that they would go to that depot to see the boys off to the war. Mm-hmm. And the girlfriends would go with them, and the parents would go with them, and they'd had a really bad time there when those boys were getting on the train. Some people would faint, and, you know, they'd just scream and cry, and the boys would wave out the train windows until they were outside, you know.
Just like the movies.
Uh-huh. Right. Just like the movies. Mm-hmm. Well, then when my daddy was farming here, and I was a little girl, and I was a tomboy and followed him everywhere, all over this farm. And I could help him hitch up a team just as good. You know, when he was hitching up the team to the wagon, well, I put the harness on one mule, and he put the harness on another mule. Excuse me just a minute.
Okay.
Well, I was starting to tell you about when Daddy farmed. Now, we didn't have any anything but horses and mules. The horses were mostly for Daddy, just shined them up and rode them. And when Mom and Daddy first married, they had a buggy. And that used to sit in this old wagon shed up here by the barn. And one time, Daddy decided he'd move it down to this other barn. And he put it out into the lot, and I climbed up in it and imagined what it would be like to ride in a buggy. And I said, "Daddy, I never did ride in a buggy. Why don't we put a horse in this?" And he said, "Well, I'm going to take it down to the barn. Just stay up there." And he pulled the buggy. You know, it was downhill to this barn. But instead of going to that barn, he acted like a runaway horse, and he'd come around this corner right here, and I was just screaming. And my grandmother and Mama came out onto the back porch to see what was going on. So that was the buggy ride. But my grandfather in Mississippi had a buggy, and he went to town every day, and I've ridden in his buggy.
So the horses were kept mostly for that. And
they were just, yeah.
Because everyone had a horse at the time.
Well,
or the farm.
We had a white horse, and she was kind of old, and I was just a kid, and I could go out into the pasture anywhere and catch her and get up by a gate or something and get on her, you know, bareback. And then I'd ride her a mile over to the post office. Out the Regis Road. And these neighbors would come out as I'd go along, and they'd say, Eva Dean, would you care to see if we have some mail, you know? And as I came back, I had everybody's mail. Not everybody's, just, you know, two or three families. But the families weren't so close together either.
So you were working at that age, too.
I guess. I didn't think that
postal
was work. And then this white horse had a bay colt, and she had a blaze face, white down her face, and she was born on my birthday. So she was my horse.
She automatically became
She was my horse, and her name was Dolly. And then she had the white horse had another colt, and it had a question mark in its face, just almost a perfect question mark, and he was Prince. And one time, Daddy and I were riding down on the far side of the place down there and had to cross a branch. And Daddy was on Dolly. Daddy was on Prince, and I was on Dolly. And I got a little bit...
Okay, you were talking about
And when I started to catch up with Daddy, the horse ran away. My horse ran away. And I began to look at the ground and think, where am I going to land, you know? And we were headed towards some woods, and Daddy kept yelling, hold on, Eva Dean, hold on. And he rode up beside me just like a cowboy and got a hold of her bridle and jerked it, you know,
and stopped her.
Oh. Otherwise, I'd have been raked off on a tree limb, maybe
legs
killed.
Broken. Right, especially legs
broken. Uh-huh. But Daddy worked hard, too. He had, I got Irwin to help me last night think of what kind of tools Daddy had. He had a mowing machine. Of course, the sickle was not like mowing machines now. Maybe it is 5 foot long or something, you know. But he put the horses, the mules, pull the mowing machine and cut the grass, the hay. All right, and when Daddy made hay, he threw it up, you know, he'd rake it. He had a hay rake.
Horse
drawn.
Like the...
Yeah, with the teeth. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. people hang on a post now and hang flower pots on.
Right, and those little seats that set up there are so dangerous.
Yeah. Yes. And he would rake that hay and then kind of stack it. And we either hauled it in on a wagon. You know, he had a hay frame made for the two-horse wagon. And they'd bring it to the barn and throw it with a pitchfork up into the barn loft. And then Daddy, in the winter, would stuff that down into the racks for the horses and the cows. And that was part of his feeding.
But did he stack hay?
Hay stacks, yes. I told Irwin last night, I can remember a haystack over by the cemetery up that way, up the hill a little. From the cemetery, and then that was mostly where he put them, mm-hmm. over on that hill, because that was close to the watering spring for the cattle,
and they
ate there, and they put a pole in the ground and stacked the hay around the pole, and then the cows would start at the bottom and keep eating, you know, their height, and once in a while. It looked like an umbrella. You know, mm-hmm. the top was left just sticking up on the pole, but the cattle had eaten all out under it. And then Daddy would go over there and maybe take a ladder and climb up on it, push it down, and he had a new haystack.
Haystack ready for them.
Mm-hmm.
And now, did he bale hay before he quit farming? Or
well, when Daddy was old and Irwin was farming, they, about 1976, they got some people... a fellow that had a hay baler to come here and bale hay. Okay. And then they got their own baler because they liked
this.
They tried it to see if they liked it, and then they bought their own. Now, Daddy had a disc harrow, and he had plows. He had, I think they called it, well, he talked about a hillside plow and a turning plow. One of them would, you get at the end of your furrow and you could lift it up and switch it over. And it would plow back. You know, it threw the dirt one direction as you came out, and then you turned it around, see, it would have turned it the opposite direction. But you could switch, turn your plow over the other way, and it would plow the, throw the dirt the same direction.
I haven't heard of one of those.
Well, I think it was a common thing, but I can't tell you what they called it. Now, Irwin would know this, so he should have been here. And Daddy had a disc harrow, like a Randall harrow, he called it. And then he had an A harrow made on, the letter, capital A, with a cross piece. And it had teeth down through it, you know. And you pulled that through the...
40 little teeth.
Right. I don't know how many. And then he had a drag, was just two logs nailed together that you drag the quads down with. And he made a roller. It was like two big cuts off of a log with an axle all the way through. And then it had a seat on it like a Randall harrow or a mowing machine. And that would squeak. You could hear him on the hills past the cemetery rolling. It just squeaked and squeaked, you know. And it made so much noise that when Mama rang the dinner bell to call him to lunch, he wouldn't hear a thing. But he could always tell when lunch was ready because the mules would just stick their ears up like this, you know. And they heard the dinner bell, and so he'd know to come to the
come
house.
Come to dinner.
Mm-hmm.
But they sure put the soil in good condition, though, didn't it?
It mashed it just like a cultipacker does now. Mm-hmm. And then he had a hay rake and a wagon. And when Daddy wanted to go to the grocery or somewhere, he had a two-wheeled cart.
Oh.
And he just hooked old Minnie, the white horse, to it and go, you know, and he could get there in a hurry. And it was like a... Well, it didn't sit down now like a race cart that you see on the racetrack, you know. But it had a little seat on it, enough for two
same
people.
Same idea.
Yeah, same idea.
Oh. And he didn't have a car then?
No, he didn't have a car until about 1936 or 1937. About 1937.
So it was good transportation.
Yeah. Well, and the roads were bad. You couldn't go in a car all the time anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So he just got there in his
car. Where did he do his, where did he go to the grocery?
I guess Rice Station, mostly, and there was a post office there, too. Over here where you turned onto the Regis Road, mm-hmm. If you had gone a little further, there's a road turns left, and that's the Rice Station Christian Church.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go on down that hill and a little ways to Rice Station Store. That was W.L. Rice and Sons, and first they had been down the hill from that store by the railroad. There was a railroad went through here. Like way back there, you could hear the train blow, and you could hear the train go down there. And when we wanted to go to Richmond or Irving, we could just go over to Regis. That's where Regis Road got its name, you see.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We'd go over to Regis and get on the train, and we could go wherever we wanted.
That's when you did your shopping. You went to on the train.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's great.
And Daddy had about 10 or 12 cows, and Daddy and Mama had a separator that you separated the milk from the cream, the cream and the milk. So I've helped milk, and Mama used to help milk part of the time. And we'd milk morning and night, and when they had baby calves, we kept them away from the cows, but would turn them in to have their supper a little, and then we finished milking the cow.
And this was done by hand.
Yes. And then Mom and Daddy, we used to laugh about my Mama and Daddy separates every night and morning. And they did that out in the spring house. And no matter how cold, Mama took a teakettle of hot water out there and washed the separator. It had to be kept real clean. And then they took this cream. First we had cream cans that went straight up and in and had two handles and a top that fitted down into the top.
Mm-hmm.
And we took that to Regis and put it on the train, and it went to Tri-State Butter Company. And we got some kind of coupons with that. The first Bible I ever had, Mama got it with coupons from the Tri-State Butter Company.
Well, now, how much did this cream bring? How much did this help?
I just wish I knew. I don't know. Mama kept records, and I've got it here.
She
had a little notebook like this all the time, and on this page she put down everything they sold, eggs and butter and milk, and what it brought. And then she had another page that told what they bought, you know, in the way of groceries. And she has one for each year for I don't know how many years. And I have them, but I haven't really gone into checking that out, you know.
So your mother and dad sold cream, eggs, milk, cattle.
Yes, well, they just sold veal calves. It took, I asked Herman about that last night. It took I don't see it here. I'll come to it and I'll tell you how long it took to top a cave.
Mm-hmm. Or did he take them to stock
pens? He'd take them to the stock pens at Richmond. Oh, here it is. 10 to 12 weeks to top a calf, and a calf weighed from 200 to 210 pounds, and they took it to Richmond and sold it. And I can remember, they'd sell a calf for, you know, $30. Mm-hmm. One time, right, like when Daddy was old and didn't fool with him much anymore, he sold a calf for about $80. And I know Mama said, that just seems like robbery. You know, it seems terrible to take that much for a little old calf.
For a calf. And now...
And now they're a lot more than that.
$450.
Yes.
You know, and that you really feel like you're getting a good deal.
Now, while Daddy was farming with these horse-drawn tools, this was a real noisy place. When you wake up in the mornings, you know, you hear the chickens up in the hen house and the geese. You know what a noise they made. And we had guineas. When they flew off the roost, they must have did everything they knew how to do because they were so noisy. And then we had turkeys. And they all were woke up hungry, I guess. And Mama
noisy
used to,
anyway.
Yeah. Mama used to take the extra milk we had. She let it clabber, and then she fed that to the chickens and the fowls, you know. And we had little, you know, we kept the little chickens and little turkeys and so forth separate. And if they did run outside, I can remember when my grandpa, just right there in the driveway, he built a slat roof-like thing, you know, kind of long, and it was like a little roof, but it sat on the ground. And they could put the chicken feed and the turkey feed in that, and the big ones couldn't get in there, but the little ones went in and ate. And then, of course, we had to keep water out all the time. That was just every morning and evening business that you took water to the...
So you had your own turkeys and chickens to eat.
The foxes got so bad, we couldn't raise our turkeys. One time we'd gone across the road to visit, and they had a front porch that just faced the cemetery. From up there, you can see every move that's made here at this place, you know. And we were sitting on that porch, and we saw the turkeys going up that hill toward the cemetery. And a fox just came, and he was just biting them and throwing them over his shoulder, and biting and throwing them over his shoulder, you know, and he just killed a bunch.
Before you could get back to anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
But what did you do with the guineas?
I don't know. I don't think
Look
we ate him. Them. I don't think we ate them. I think, you know, they do. They go, pop rack,
my father
rack.
Has 30.
They could look at them. Fly from up on this hill, clear around here to this backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And all I know is they made a lot of noise, and they laid eggs, and they had little guineas.
Did you eat the eggs?
Yeah, I have. They were smaller than a hen egg.
And richer.
It took them 3 weeks to hatch, just like it did the chickens. And for geese, it took 4 weeks.
Oh, I didn't know it was that long.
And a goose egg is a lot bigger, you know. And when Mama was gathering the turkey eggs, she used to lay them upstairs over, that was her dining room. And it was cool up there, and she'd lay those eggs up there on the bed. Nobody slept up there. And neighbors would come, and they'd bring, I've known of them bringing eggs to swap to turkey eggs. Or they would come and buy turkey eggs. She sold her geese to some poultry man, you know, like she'd pick them. And Mama thought that when I got grown and got married, I must have a feather bed. So she'd pick her geese and she made me a feather bed. And it's still here. And I don't know what to do with it.
Yeah. What do you do with them now?
I think I'm going to make pillows out of it. If I can figure out what to do with the feathers while I'm making the pillows.
That's out of them. I still have my feather bed on my bed at home.
Do you?
At my mother's.
Mm-hmm.
And I still sleep on it.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone, like...
One time when it was real cold in the winter, Erman and I, we built the house down the road here, you know. We lived down there 15 years before my daddy died, and then we came to stay with Mama. And one time it was so cold, and I said, Erman, I've got a real good feather bed we've never used. And he, oh, I'd like to sleep on that. So he brought it down there, and we put it on the bed and went to bed. At 1 o'clock, I was still trying to get fixed to go to sleep. And we got up that night and took it off the bed because we just couldn't get used to it. That,
I love them.
You know, maybe we'd have still been sleeping on it if we'd have just tucked it out.
Made it one night.
Yeah, because we just weren't used to it.
Did she sell feathers?
No. No, she just made cushions and pillows and feather bed for me. And I think once I tried my luck at picking a goose, but I didn't know how, you know. And she tried to, but she would put the goose's head under its wing and turn it upside down in her lap, and then right back under its tail, like, you know, toward its middle, was the nicest, softest feathers, and out of its breast, too, and she got those. Geese looked kind of ragged when they got picked, you know.
Kind of sheared.
Another thing they had here when Daddy was here, now he had his horses and cows and pigs for meat. He didn't raise a lot of pigs. He just sold them for meat. I mean, he just raised them.
He dried his meat, softened it, cured it, mm-hmm. smoked it, whatever.
Never lost a bit. We have trouble now. We have mm-hmm. trouble trying to keep it. But he raised sheep. And he raised sheep to keep the cat pastures clipped.
From growing back.
They sheep will eat a, you know, it looks like a yard that's been mowed when sheep run on a pasture. Mm-hmm. And
how many did he have?
He had 30 or something like that. And once in a while there would be one time an old yo died and she had a lamb. So he gave that lamb to me to feed and take care of it. And we kept it in the spring lot, and I'd go to that gate and call it. I'd just say, here, lammy, lammy, lammy. And I had this big bottle of milk with a long nipple, and it would suck that. And that was feeding the lamb, you know. And then there came a time when they'd cut the lamb's tails off. Because if you let the lamb's tail grow, it catches all the weed seeds and dried stuff. Just gets to be a mat of stuff. So they always cut the lamb's tails off about that long. So they cut my lamb's tail off. And it bled, and the lamb bladed, you know, when they did it. And I was so sorry for it, and I put a bandage on it. I remember when that lamb got big enough to sell, it brought $17.
Oh.
And I was just a little girl, and Daddy put that in Waco Bank and started my bank account.
With that lamp.
With that lamp.
Oh, that's great. Well, that was a good price then, too.
Yes, I guess so.
Did he ever eat them?
Yes, Daddy loved. We called it mutton. Mm-hmm. And Mama always said, oh, I couldn't eat a bite of that if I was starving, you know. But one time we had mutton and beef at the same time, and Daddy switched what he had on his plate to, you know, at when she got up to take up some biscuits or something, why, he switched this meat just to play with her, you know, and she ate it and talked about that good beef, and she just couldn't eat mutton. But she was right then.
I think it's like me. It's just the idea of eating a lamb. You know, they're so precious.
Yes, that's right.
It's the idea of eating it. Yeah.
I know when Daddy dressed the lamb, well, he hung it up at the back of the wagon shed up there by its hind feet, mm-hmm. and he cut its throat with an axe. And then he cut its skin right down the middle of its tummy. And he kept saying, we must not let this wool touch the flesh. He kept rolling it out, you know, rolling away from it. And I remember that he wanted it to bleed good, and he wanted it to, that fur, it, I don't know, it had a grease to it. And I don't know that he thought that much about bacteria. I think it would make it have a taste of some kind, like the oil in the wool.
Would get on the flesh.
Now, my uncle on Crooked Creek over the mountain here had sheep, and they had sheep shears. That it was a three-legged little thing that stood on the ground they kept their foot on, and then a pipe sort of a thing, and it had some wheels, and you turn a handle like this, and out there was some shears, like clippers, like hand clippers that you cut people's hair a long time ago. Well, this would run from this turning the handle, you know. And they'd lay an old sheep up on a table-like thing at the barn they had for that. They put a strap around its neck, and they tied its front feet and its back feet. They laid it on one side, and Daddy would start with these clippers and go right around like this, like you're mowing around the hillside. And that fur would lay back, and then he'd go again. And the clippers were about 2.5 inches wide. Once in a while, he'd nip the sheep, you know, and she'd kick. And
poor sheep.
And then they'd roll out, and then they'd tuck it back under and roll her over the other way. And then he'd cut on this side down to where he'd meet his chuch, you know, at the backbone of the sheep. Uh-huh. And then they'd roll that up, and we sold wool.
Where did you sell it?
It went to some company. It was mailed, shipped away, but I can't tell you. I just don't know what company they sold those.
You don't know how much that sold.
And I don't know what it sold for.
No wonder. I'm sure it wasn't very much. It was a lot then.
Yes. It was. Well, they thought they were getting rich, I guess, with that. Once a year they sold wool, you know, mm-hmm. both of them. And it wasn't too much trouble. And then they'd unbuckle this old sheep, and she was so glad to get down, and she'd shake herself and snort, and, you know, and she looked so ragged and
so
skinned. Yes.
How long did he keep those? How long did he keep sheep?
Well, I was 20 years old when, let's see, that I was born in 1922. I guess around 1940, the dogs would get in. Mm-hmm. It wasn't wild dogs, but it was police dogs that the neighbors had for pets, and they just seemed like they just gang up and knew where sheep were, you know, and they'd chase them. Once in a while, they'd kill one.
It just wasn't worth it anymore.
And so Daddy just thought that was cruel, you know. He just sold sheep. But now, I can remember when people drove, like, I don't know where from, Wisemantown maybe, and they were going to Richmond to sell their cattle or their sheep. Or one time, I can remember, turkeys. they just start out some morning driving them down this country road, you know, and
on foot,
and they had four or five people who would look ahead if there was not a fence someplace. Most everybody's farm was fenced. The roadway was fenced, and they'd just drive them, you know. I heard Daddy talk about over at Panola one time. Somebody had gotten a flock of turkeys that far, and it came nightfall, so they began to fly up in trees, and so they stayed there all night and let their turkeys roost, and then they took them on the next day. I don't really know. Now, we think of stock pens at Richmond out there, a certain street, you know, but mm-hmm. I don't know where they took these to. Maybe not that very place.
But they took them to
Richmond. They knew where they were going, but it was in Madison County, near Richmond.
When's the last you remember?
Oh, I must have been it could have been 1925.
Mm-hmm. Well, the roads were still bad, too bad.
The roads were bad, and they were fenced. You know, like our garden's wide open to anything that might go along the road now, but nothing ever does.
But it wasn't fenced.
No, it was fenced. Everything was fenced. The road was fenced on both sides, mm-hmm. so that you didn't have any trouble driving a bunch of cows down the road.
Just driving.
Yeah, that was all there was to it. Just on foot, driving.
It seems like an awful lot of work now, doesn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it would be. I guess we'd do it now.
But I'd imagine.
Oh, and when we were talking last night about the horses and mules, and Erman reminded me that when my grandfather was living, they had Jacks and Jennies.
Oh,
now, I remember when my mother and daddy tried to explain to me one time about Jacks and Jennies and horses and mules, and Erman was good enough to tell me in a way last night that I finally got this into my head.
Good, I want to hear it.
Good.
I've never understood.
Okay. If you have a Jack and a Jenny, they're little animals of their own breed. You know,
mm-hmm.
if you breed a Jack and a Jenny, you get a little Jack or a Jenny.
Okay.
Now that's the Jack and Jenny bit.
And it's a little mule.
It's not a mule.
But it looks like a little
mule. It's a donkey.
A little donkey, okay.
If you have a horse and a mare and you breed them, you get a little horse.
Okay.
If you breed a jack to a mare, you get a mule. It's either a little male mule or a little female mule.
But they can't breed.
But mules do not reproduce their kind. Erman said it has been known that what Daddy has told him that maybe one out of a thousand, or I don't know if he said a thousand or 10,000, but it can happen, you know, that a mare mule can have a little colt. That's something that would be in a paper. That's something for the Guinness Record.
The Ripley's, believe it or not.
Yeah, you know, it's not impossible, but it's very far, far, far apart. But that was just so clear to me when he told me that last night.
You never see little Jackson and Jenny.
No, and he said they're almost extinct. And when there's Jacks and Jennies, there's no longer Jacks to breed to a horse, mare, there wouldn't be any more mules.
Well, they're kind of dying out anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I had never seen a Jack or Jenny, and we had mules all of my life. Oh, we still have.
Yeah.
But I have never seen a Jack or
Jenny. Daddy's mules were gray, almost white, and they were called Beck and Ellen.
Mm-hmm.
And you could ride Ellen, but you couldn't ride Beck.
You can always ride one of a team, but you can't ride the other.
Mm-hmm.
The other one's always wild.
And Daddy said he decided one time he was going to ride Beck anyway. So he got on her back, and she humped up just like your finger bent up like this, just like a knuckle. And he rode her a mile out to the schoolhouse and back on that little knot. And so...
And her probably kicking and busting.
And she didn't know. She just humped up and went on.
And
but,
went on.
But he didn't think it was much fun to ride her anymore.
Not too comfortable.
And back when Daddy had the 10 to 12 cows and the horses and the mules, he raised like 6 or 7 or 8 acres of corn. And that still was to feed the animals.
Feed the animals on the farm.
And he just cut the corn and put it in shocks. And then they'd bring it to the barn and put the corn in the crib and haul the fodder out to the cattle. That was the way they fed the cattle.
So they didn't pick the corn in the field, as we do now?
No. But they didn't have a corn picker. They had a little thing, a corn shucker, that they wore a strap across the back of your hand and a little flat thing like a knife that hooked down this way, and you tore into that shuck with that, you know. You shucked the corn.
I've never seen one of those. What about a sheller?
And then we had a sheller, and it was made on a box, a big box, and it was screwed onto the side, and you put the ear of corn in that and turn a big handle, and that shelled the corn off. Now, that was really getting prosperous when you had a corn sheller.
I remember ours.
And we used to shell corn when I was a little girl and take it to mill. And Daddy would save out from the barn the best, you know, good ears of corn for meal. And he'd bring it in, and we always thought it was so much fun when we shelled corn. We had a fireplace going, you know, and Grandma and Grandpa and Mom and Daddy and me would shell corn. And I'd build pig pens out of the cobs, you know, stack them up. And they'd like maybe shell the first few rows out of an ear and then let me have that to shell. And it'd take me,
it would come off easier.
Maybe I was lucky, I'd shell 2 ears while they shell the whole, they called it a turn of corn. And we had meal sacks that were real thick, you know, a special bag that we took that to meal in.
And where'd you take it to meal?
Well, over at the end of Regis Road, there was a Mr. Simp Wagers who had a grinder, a mill. And over on Crooked Creek, there was another one. So it was just, if Daddy wanted to see his sister on Crooked Creek, he went that way. And if he just wanted to run the mill, he went that way.
What, did they charge, or did you...
Oh, yeah. Well, now, they took a little mill out. Anyway, they always took a little mill out. I think either way, maybe Daddy left a little meal for the pay. Maybe that's what that was for.
Mm-hmm. The pay for grinding it.
Yeah.